Pijana Vallabha Kirivardhari Gopi Jana Vallabha Kirivardhari Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana Chamuna Tira Vanachari Chamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Kirivardhari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Kirivardhari Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana 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 Chamuna Tira Vanachari Chamuna Tira Vanachari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari जय राधा माधव राधा माधव राधे जय पंचतत्व जय पंचतत्व पंचतत्व जय पंचतत्व जय जय प्रभुपाद 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 जय प्रभुपाद Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Purigraji Kacharya Sotra Sotra Shri Srimad His Wine Grace Srila Isi Bhaktiranta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki His Khan Bibiri Founder Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Krantara Chimad Bhagavatam Ki Samveda Gaura Bhaktarindi Ki Gaura Bhimarandi ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपः कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वापदान्तिकां वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साकृजातं सहगुणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवां साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगुणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कान्ता राधकान्ता नमोऽस्तु ते तप्त काञ्चन गौरङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानं पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभुनित्यानन्द श्रीयद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासरिगौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
This morning reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 3, The Birth of Lord Krishna, Verse 25.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya Nashte loke dvi parardhavasane Nashte loke dvi paradhavasane Nashte loke dvi paradhavasane Maha bhuteshu adibhutam gateshu Maha bhuteshu adibhutam gateshu Mahabhuteshvadi Bhutam Kateshu Vyakte Vyaktam Kala Vegena Yate Vyakte Vyaktam Kala Vegena Yate Vyakte Vyaktam Kala Vegena Yate Bhavan Eka Shishyate Shesha Samkhya Bhavanika Shishyate Shesha Samkhya Bhavanika Shishyate Shesha Samkhya Nashte Lokedvi Paradhavasane Mahabhuteshvadi Bhutam Gateshu Vyakte Vyaktam Kala Vigenayate Bhavanike Shishyati Shesha Samkhya Nashte Loketvi Paradhavasane Mahabhuteshvadi Bhutam Gateshu Vyakte Vyaktam Kala Vigenayate Bhavanike Shishyati Shesha Samkhya Nashte Loketvi Paradhavasane Mahabhuteshvadi Bhutam Gateshu Vyakte Vyaktam Kala Vigenayate Bhavanika Shishyati Shesha Samkhya Nashte Loketvi Paradhavasane Mahabhuteshvadi Bhutam Gateshu Vyakte Vyaktam Kala Vigenayate Bhavanika Shishyati Shesha Samkhya Nashte Loketvi Paradhavasane Mahabhuteshvadi Bhutam Gateshu Vyakte Vyaktam Kala Vigenayate Bhavanika Shishyati Shesha Samkhya Nashte Loketvi Paradhavasane Mahabhuteshvadi Bhutam Gateshu Vyakte Vyaktam Kala Vigenayate Bhavanika Shishyati Shesha Samkhya Nashte Loketvi Paradhavasane Mahabhuteshvadi Bhutam Gateshu Vyakte Vyaktam Kala Vigenayate Bhavanika Shishyati Shesha Samkhya Nashte Loketvi Paradhavasane Mahabhuteshvadi Bhutam Gateshu Vyakte Vyaktam Kala Vigenayate Vyakte Vyaktam Shri Shesha Samkhya
Madhuji
Nashte Loketvi Paradhavasane Mahabhuteshvadi Bhutam Gateshu Vyakte Vyaktam Kala Vigenayate Bhavanika Shishyati Shesha Samkhya Nashte
After the annihilation
Loke
of the cosmic manifestation.
Tri Paradha Avasane.
After millions and millions of years, the life of Brahma. Mahabhuteshu. When the five primary elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Adiputam Gadeshu. Enter within the subtle elements of sense perception. Vyakte. When everything manifested. Avyaktam. Into the unmanifested. Kalavegena. By the force of time. Yate. Enters. Bhavan. Your lordship. Ekaha. Only one. Shishyate. Remains. Ashesha Samgya. The same one with different names. Translation purport by Srila Prabhupada. Translation: after millions of years, at the time of cosmic annihilation, when everything, manifested and unmanifested, is annihilated by the force of time, the five gross elements enter into the subtle conception, and the manifested categories enter into the unmanifested substance. At that time, you alone remain, and you are known as Ananta Shesha Naga. Please repeat: after millions of years, at the time of cosmic annihilation, when everything, manifested and unmanifested, is annihilated by the force of time, the five gross elements enter into the subtle conception, and the manifested categories enter into the unmanifested substance. At that time, you alone remain, and you are known as Ananta Shesha Naga. Purport. At the time of annihilation, the five gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, enter into the mind, intelligence, and false ego, ahankara, and the entire cosmic manifestation enters into the spiritual energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who alone remains as the origin of everything. The Lord is therefore known as Sheshanaga, as Adi Purusha, and by many other names. Devaki therefore prayed, after many millions of years, when Lord Brahma comes to the end of his life, the annihilation of the cosmic manifestation takes place. At that time, the five elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether, enter into the Mahatattva. The Mahatattva again enters by the force of time into the non-manifested total material energy. The total material energy enters into the energetic Pradhan, and the Pradhan enters into you. Therefore, after the annihilation of the whole cosmic manifestation, you alone remain with your transcendental name, form, quality, and paraphernalia. My Lord, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, because you are the director of the unmanifested total energy and the ultimate reservoir of the material nature. My Lord, the whole cosmic manifestation is under the influence of time, beginning from the moment up to the duration of the year. All act under your direction. You are the original director of everything and the reservoir of all potent energies. So Srila Prabhupada has paraphrased Devaki's prayers. Let's read the translation purport once more. Translation and verse.
Nashte loke dviparadhavasane mahabhudeshvadibhudam gateshu vyakte vyaktam kala vigena yate bhavanike shishyati shesha samgya.
After millions of years, at the time of cosmic annihilation, when everything manifested and unmanifested is annihilated by the force of time, the five gross elements enter into the subtle conception, and the manifested categories enter into the unmanifested substance. At that time, you alone remain, and you are known as Ananta Shesha Naga. The chapter is entitled The Birth of Lord Krishna, and of course we know this is the 10th canto. The beginning of each volume of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a short phrase which kind of summarizes the entire canto. Does anyone know what this canto 10 is called? Samam Bonam. If you look in the, before the actual book starts in the beginning pages, here it's 10th canto, the Samam Bonam. So each canto has a little phrase like that. There's status quo, right, and creation of the fourth order. They're different, almost overlook them, kind of invisible. It's just mentioned once in the beginning of the canto. So Summum Bonum is the 10th canto. What does Summum Bonum mean? Sorry?
Best of the best.
Best of the best. Yes, the topmost good. So 10th canto is the Summum Bonum, topmost good, like the ultimate. We're reading here about the birth of Lord Krishna. So when we think of 10th canto, in this chapter, this is like the summit or the climax of all the so many cantos that we've gone through from 1 to 9. And actually now the Lord has, in this chapter, just appeared. So this is like the apex, the summit, the climax of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. Now finally, Krishna has appeared. In one sense, everything coming before this was an introduction. Was a preamble to the Lord Himself appearing as Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. And this is the speciality of the 10th canto. And we know how many, Prabhupada used to criticize people who would just directly go to 10th canto without reading the other cantos. And this is not the recommended way to study Srimad Bhagavatam. We have to learn about the Lord and His different features, His different potencies in the 9 cantos. Then we can fully appreciate Krishna when He comes in the 10th canto. And even those who jump to the 10th canto, they generally won't read verses like this. This kind of verse, you would think, would be more applicable. You know, maybe the demigods would offer such a prayer to Krishna. Maybe Gajendra or Atri Muni, these devotees in a little lower status. But here we see Devaki herself, mother of Krishna. She's offering very philosophical, detailed prayers about the Lord and His, you know, universal manifestation and the annihilation creation. This is not the kind of verse that people who jump to 10th canto will expect. Not only 10th canto, but this is actually the birth of Krishna. So it's interesting. You know, we've already heard Vasudeva's prayers. He also prayed in a similar vein. And also Devaki now is praying in very philosophical terms. So one understanding we can get from this is that these devotees were very, very educated, very, very shastrically qualified. You know, Devaki, we know her as a princess, as a queen. We don't generally consider someone like Devaki as being a great scholar. But if you read these prayers, yesterday's prayer, today's, and the next few verses also, she has very deep understanding, philosophical understanding of how the universe is going on, the Lord's powers, His potencies, and she's expressing that. Her knowledge is shining through in these verses. So sometimes we think that, you know, you have to study so much, we have to learn all these verses, and you know, then we can present some knowledge. But even these great devotees like Devaki, Prabhupada sometimes would say that the gopis also, they're not considered as very learned. The village cowherd girls, you know, what is their job? Their job is to take care of the cows. But we also see, even when the gopis speak to Krishna, when they're searching for Krishna, when He disappears, and they're offering the whole chapter of prayers, and they present very high philosophical truths. When Uddhava comes to speak to the gopis also, Radharani's talking to the bumblebee, and she's expressing knowledge of Krishna in His different incarnations even. So actually, these Rajavasis, these great devotees of the Lord, are very, very learned and qualified. So that's not their main identity, you know. Here, Devaki is offering these prayers. We know that actually it's the etiquette when you meet a superior personality or when you meet the Lord, you have to offer some prayers. It's the etiquette. We learned that right in the first canto when Ashwatthama shoots the Brahmastra at Arjuna. You know, already the Brahmastra is in the air and the whole sky is lit up and burning heat is coming towards Arjuna. But even in that critical situation, he doesn't know what's happening. So he turns to Krishna for help. But before he asks Krishna, save me, he offers a few prayers. And Prabhupada mentions in the purport that this is the proper etiquette. So even in that very dangerous situation, he found time to offer a few prayers. So here also, Devaki is offering prayers to Krishna. Well, at the moment, he's still in the form of Narayan. And a few verses, we'll see that on Vasudeva's and Devaki's requests, he'll turn into a baby Krishna. So these, you know, great devotees, they're very much aware of Krishna's power, Krishna's potency, Krishna's majesty, but that's not their prime focus. Just like we couldn't imagine, and we won't also find any verse like this spoken by Mother Yashoda, for instance. Mother Yashoda also gets some glimpses of Krishna's divinity. For example, particularly when Krishna opens his mouth and Yashoda looks inside. Actually, this happened twice. Once when Yashoda was feeding Krishna, come up in a couple of chapters, she saw the whole universe manifested in his mouth and she thought it was some kind of illusion, didn't pay attention. And the second time, which is the more famous time, is when the cowherd boys and Balaram, they complained to Yashoda that Krishna has been eating mud, eating dirt. So then Yashoda comes and asks Krishna to open his mouth. And then there's a more elaborate description of all the different things she sees, you know, the entire universe, universal form of the Lord. And she's bewildered by that. So she has some idea of Krishna's divinity, but she doesn't focus on that. She never offers any prayers like this. Whenever Krishna is in some danger, like when Krishna killed Putana, after Krishna killed some demons, Trinavarta, they take Krishna on their laps, and the gopis perform some achman. They install the names of the Lord in the different parts of the body to protect Krishna. But they see Krishna is just a small child. And even though they have some idea of Krishna's powers, they don't focus on that. And that actually comes in the way of their relationship with Krishna. Therefore, you'll never see Yashoda or Nanda Maharaj speaking verses like this. This is very much a verse in the mood of Aishwarya. And in Vrindavan, that mood of Aishwarya is absent, totally. So, as I said, whenever Krishna gets into some kind of danger, the gopis pray for him, they try to protect him. And later on, also we heard yesterday, there was an instance when Krishna gave the gopas the vision of the spiritual world. So they understood that here's the Lord, he's the Supreme Personality. Previously also, during Krishna's name-giving ceremony, Garga Muni had spoken these kinds of things, that this child incarnated in different colors and different ages, and he saved the world many times. And he basically indicated that he's the Supreme Lord. So Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd community, they knew this. They knew in the back of their minds that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. But that didn't actually mean much to them, because they were so much in love with Krishna, had so much affection for Krishna, according to their rasa, whether it's paternal or friendly or conjugal, that Krishna's being the Supreme Lord really didn't mean much to them. It wasn't important. Rather, they thought of Krishna as a hopeless child. And Krishna actually gets much more enjoyment from this kind of relationship. In Chaitanya-charitamrita, there is a section in the Adi Lila, we're talking about the confidential reasons for the Lord's appearance as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this is a very interesting, it's like Krishna is revealing his own internal, how he thinks himself, how he feels, which we don't often get access to. So I'd like to also just go through that section. I'll read the Bengali and then we'll hear the English. So this is from Adi Lila chapter 4, text 17 onwards. Aishwarya gyanete shabha jagata mishrita Aishwarya shihila prebe nahe mora prita Amare ishara mane apana kehina Tare prema basha amina hai adhina Amake ta jeje bhakta bhaje je bhabe Tare sheshe bhabe bhaji e mora shabhabe Ye yata mam prabadyante tamstathaiva bhajam yaham Mama Vartmanu Vartante Manushya Partha Sarvashaha Mora Putra Mora Shaka Mora Pranapati E Bhabe Jai More Kore Shuddha Bhakti Apanake Boramane Amare Samahina She Bhabe Hoi Amitahara Adhina Mai Bhaktir Hibhutanam Amritatvaya Kalpate Nishchayat Asin Matsneho Bhavati nam madapanaha Matamore putra bhabe kore na bandhan Ati hina gyane kore lalana palan Shaka shuddha shakhe kore skhande arohan Tumi kona boralok tumi ami shama
Priya jodi mana kori koraye bhartsana vedashuti hoite hare shema ramana.
So let's listen to the English, obviously, because most of us may not understand the Bengali. This is a narration by Amalabhakta Prabhu, or now Amalabhakta Swami. Hopefully it'll work out.
The Lord Himself says, "All the universe is filled with the conception of my majesty, but love weakened by that sense of majesty does not satisfy me. If one regards me as the Supreme Lord and himself as a subordinate, I do not become subservient to his love, nor can it control me. In whatever transcendental mellow my devotee worships me, I reciprocate with him. That is my natural behavior. In whatever way my devotees surrender unto me, I reward him accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pritha. If one cherishes pure, loving devotion to me, thinking of me as his son, his friend, or his beloved, regarding himself as great and considering me his equal or inferior, I become subordinate to him. As I once said to the gopis, devotional service rendered to me by the living beings revives their eternal life. O my dear damsels of Vraja, your affection for me is your good fortune, for it is the only means by which you have obtained my favor. Mother sometimes binds me as her son. She nourishes and protects me, thinking me utterly helpless. My friends climb on my shoulders in pure friendship, saying, what kind of big man are you? You and I are equal. If my beloved consort reproaches me in a sulky mood, that steals my mind from the reverent hymns of the Vedas. Taking these pure devotees with me, I shall descend and sport in various wonderful ways, unknown even in Vaikuntha. I shall...
So this is a very interesting section from Adilila, where Krishna is really revealing his heart, how he feels. And therefore, these kinds of prayers, as given by Mother Devaki, they don't actually attract Krishna's mind as much as the loving dealings of the Vrajavasis. Therefore, it's considered that the highest manifestation of Atsalya, as we're talking about the mother of Krishna, is manifested by Yashodamai. And Nectar of Devotion, there is a chapter talking about the Vatsalya Rasa, and there is actually a list of 9 personalities who are the topmost, they have the topmost manifestation of Vatsalya Bhav, starting from Mother Yashoda. She is the epitome of motherhood or paternal affection towards Krishna. So I'd like us to go through these 9 personalities. So number 1, I already said, is Mother Yashoda. Number 2, anyone knows? Who is the second epitome of Vatsalya Bhava? Yes, number 2 is Nanda Maharaj. So Yashoda and Nanda. Number 3? Number 3 is Rohini Devi, the mother of Balaram. Rohini Devi is unique because she was present in Vrindavan Leela and also in Dwarka Leela. So she saw both pastimes of, both aspects of Krishna's pastimes. So number 1, Yashoda, 2, Nanda Maharaj, number 3, Rohini. Number 4 is interesting. Number 4 is all the gopis of Vrindavan who lost their sons during that 1 year when Brahma stole the cowherd boys, and Krishna became their child. Krishna became all the gopas, just so the gopis could express their motherly affection towards Krishna via their own sons, because their son became Krishna, therefore they loved their sons as much as they previously loved Krishna. So they're the fifth, is that right? Fourth. They're the fourth on the list. You saw Yashoda, Nanda, Rohini, then the all the gopis. Number 5 is Devaki. Number 6 is the other wives of Vasudev. He had 15 other wives. So they also were in that maternal relationship with Krishna. Number 7 is Kunti Devi. She also had the motherly feeling. She's the aunt of Krishna, mother of Arjuna, mother of the Pandavas. She also had a very close relation with Krishna. That's number 7. Number 8 is Vasudev, the actual father of Krishna. No, the wives of Vasudev earlier. I'll do them again once to make it clear. And the last is Sandipani Muni, Krishna's acharya or Krishna's teacher. So to go through it once more, number 1, Yashoda. Number 2, Nanda Maharaj. Number 3, Rohini. Number 4, the elderly gopis whose sons were taken by Brahma. Number 5, Devaki. Number 6, the other wives of Vasudev. Number 7, Kunti. Number 8, Vasudev. Number 9, Sandipani Muni. Okay, so this is a nice list. We can try to memorize this list, and then we can appreciate accordingly the how each of these personalities shows greater and greater paternal affection and love for Krishna. So, therefore, in Vrindavan, Krishna is fully manifest. He's fully comfortable. He fully acts according to his devotees' desires. In these more formal situations, like here, he's listening to these prayers, but they don't give him as much satisfaction as he gets in Vrindavan. Therefore, Krishna is fully manifest in Vrindavan. He's able to engage with his devotees in all the different varieties of rasas, and he appreciates it so much more when his devotees are not concentrating on his divinity, on his being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They're not offering this kind of respect and worship. He's very happy, as we heard, when the gopis climb on him and wrestle with him. Sometimes the gopis even defeat Krishna. When the gopis chastise him with harsh words, sulking words, Krishna gets so much relish from those kinds of exchanges, much more than these kind of prayers, even though it's offered by Devaki. So therefore, Vrindavan is the ultimate dham. In Lord Chaitanya's pastimes also, there's a similar exchange. We know that Nimai, when he was small, he was very, very naughty. You know, as naughty as Krishna was, Nimai was similarly very naughty. So once when Nimai was small, Jagannath Mishra was kind of fed up of his mischievous habits. So there's many descriptions of all the different things Nimai used to get up to. So Jagannath Mishra, his father, chastised him quite severely, trying to, you know, bring his son to the right path, not that he becomes some kind of outlaw, ruffian, or terror to society. And Nimai is still quite small then. So that night, Jagannath Mishra is sleeping, and in his dream, some very effulgent brahmana comes. And he's saying, you know who your son is? And how dare you chastise him like this? He's such a great personality. And there's a whole exchange. This is all within the dream of Jagannath Mishra. There's a whole exchange between this brahmana and Jagannath Mishra. And Jagannath Mishra says, it's still my duty to teach my child. So you can't tell me not to. And ultimately he says, Jagannath Mishra replied, even if my son is not a common man, but Narayan, still it is the duty of a father to instruct his son. Mishra kahe putra keno nahe Narayan tathapi pita dharma putrera shikshan. So they had some exchange like this, and it doesn't describe who is actually this brahmana, maybe some demigod, some great personality, but they have this exchange in the dream, and they keep on discussing, and the brahmana is very happy that Jagannath Mishra is so fixed in his vatsalya bhav that even if Nimai is Narayan, it doesn't change my attitude towards him. Still, I'm going to correct him. I'm going to chastise him when he does something naughty. And being very pleased, the brahmana left after talking with Jagannath Mishra. When Jagannath Mishra awakened from his dream, he was very much astonished. He related the dream to his friends and relatives, and every one of them was very much astonished to hear of it. So just like Krishna's divinity was not important to the Rajavasis, Nimai's divinity also was not very important to his associates. Sometimes when Lord Chaitanya was addressed as Vishnu, or devotees were trying to regard him as the Supreme Lord, and he would close his ears and say, "No, no, this is nonsense, don't speak like that. To consider an ordinary person as Narayan is a great offense." And he would hide his divinity. But every now and then, it couldn't be hidden, and devotees would, you know, like when he was manifesting the Mahaprakash Leela, all the devotees were able to directly glorify him as the Supreme Lord. Now, but generally, he didn't accept that kind of praise. He was presenting himself as a devotee of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya also, he was sometimes criticized for being a sentimentalist. In Bengali, it's called bhavuk, just like we have bhav. We all know what bhav is. So bhavuk is a sentimentalist, someone who has too much bhav. And especially the Mayavadis, they used to criticize Lord Chaitanya for being a sentimentalist, for dancing and chanting on the streets. And Prakashananda Saraswati especially, he was criticizing Lord Chaitanya for being a sentimentalist, a bhavuk. That he's a sannyasi, sannyasi's dharma is to study Vedanta, to study philosophy, and he's just associating with low-class people, chanting and dancing, jumping around on the street, very undignified. This is not the proper behavior for a sannyasi. So, like this, Lord Chaitanya was sometimes criticized. When Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya met him also, he thought, "Oh, this sannyasi is so beautiful, he's so young. Unless he's fixed up in knowledge of Vedanta, how will he maintain sannyas?" And so Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya took it upon himself to teach Lord Chaitanya Vedanta, considering that Lord Chaitanya is not learned, he's a sentimentalist. And so we know the story how for 7 days Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was instructing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Vedanta philosophy. And Lord Chaitanya just sat there. He accepted, "Oh, this person wants to benefit me. You know, he's my well-wisher. He wants to instruct me. It's good, I should hear." And that's what he told the devotees. But he was just sitting there for 1 week listening without making any comment. And after 1 week, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya started to doubt. You know, and he asked him directly that, "You've been listening to me for 1 week. Do you understand what I'm saying? You haven't asked any question or made any comment." And Lord Chaitanya said, "Actually, I can understand Vedanta Sutra, but what you're explaining, I don't understand at all." And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was surprised and a little offended, because he's known to be the greatest scholar of his generation. And then Lord Chaitanya said, "Actually, the Vedanta Sutra, the teachings of Vedanta are bright like the sun, but you're trying to cover them with your cloud-like interpretations, your indirect interpretations." And then Lord Chaitanya launched into his explanation of Vedanta Sutra, and he simply blew away Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhauma was thinking that, you know, he's just a young child, he's a sentimentalist, he doesn't know, he hasn't studied philosophy. And suddenly he's getting this deep, deep explanations of the Vedanta from Lord Chaitanya, and he's just dumbstruck. He can't even respond. He tries to make some arguments, and Lord Chaitanya just demolishes all his arguments without any effort. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, then he realizes that, "Actually, I've made a great mistake. Already the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had told him that this person, Nimai, he's actually the Supreme Lord." And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya couldn't accept that. But now when he's hearing this philosophy coming from Nimai Pandit, then he's simply blown away, and he surrenders to the Lord and becomes a Vaishnava. Similarly, the Mayavadi sannyasis, they also considered Lord Chaitanya a sentimentalist. And when finally they met face to face, there was one Brahmana in Varanasi, he was a Vaishnava, and he was feeling, along with the other devotees, they were feeling great pain hearing all this criticism of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this Brahmana made an arrangement where all the Mayavadi sannyasis were invited to his house, and he also invited Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went there, and he manifested great humility. He paid obeisances to everyone, and he sat down near the foot wash. And then he manifested his effulgence. And these Mayavadis, of course, they're all into Brahman. And suddenly they see the Brahmajyoti right there in front of them. So they're all very surprised and attracted. And they see that, "Oh, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so humble. He's paid obeisances to us. He's taking the humble position, sitting in the lower place, an unclean place even." So Prakashananda Saraswati takes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and raises him onto a nice sitting area. And they start to speak very nicely. And once again, Lord Chaitanya, he says, you know, he's asked, "Why are you dancing and chanting with a sentimentalist? You're a sannyasi, you should be with us studying Vedanta."
And Lord Chaitanya says, actually, I'm a great fool. Guru more murkha deki korilo shason. Said, my spiritual master saw me to be a great fool, murkh, and he chastised me. He said, you're not fit for studying Vedanta. You should just chant the holy names of the Lord. So of course, when someone says, my guru instructed me to do this, then no one can object if you're following your guru's instructions. But during the course of the conversation, Lord Chaitanya again, he very easily defeats all the impersonalist interpretations of the Vedanta, which the Mayavadis are studying, all the sannyasis are studying. So that's what Shankaracharya did. He created some word jugglery and indirect interpretations of the scriptures to focus on the impersonal aspect of the Lord, the Brahmajyoti. But Lord Chaitanya very clearly explained to the Mayavadi sannyasis that Shankaracharya's interpretations are indirect. They're not the main way to understand these verses. And he gave the direct explanation, of course, you know, showing that Krishna, that the Supreme Brahman is not impersonal, that the Lord in his personal form as Krishna is the ultimate feature of the Absolute Truth. And by chanting his holy names, one can gain realization of that. So this is described in two chapters in Chaitanya Charitamrita, both in the Adi Lila and Madhya Lila, in great detail. How Lord Chaitanya defeated the Mayavadis very easily, and they were all also converted from impersonalism to personalism. They all became Vaishnavas. So, although sometimes it appears that Vaishnavas are engaged in something that seems very simple, chanting Hare Krishna, doing kirtan, dancing, but actually with this very great philosophy behind our practices, behind chanting Hare Krishna, behind performing kirtan, and we have the whole Srimad Bhagavatam to rely on for shastric advice. So Vaishnavas are not simply sentimental bhavuks, you know, that don't have any knowledge, but actually we can prove our points on the basis of Srimad Bhagavatam, on the basis of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. So we have to study the shastras, we also have to chant Hare Krishna, and these activities are both in integral parts of our bhakti. So Vaishnavas may appear to be not studying like the Mayavadis, but actually we have the conclusions of the scriptures given to us by Lord Chaitanya, by the Goswamis, ultimately by Srila Prabhupada, in a very simple and direct and conclusive manner. So we heard about, from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, about Krishna's heart, what he's feeling inside, and why he came as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And there's also another little clip I would like to play for you, which talks about Krishna's head. So we'll listen to this from Srila Prabhupada and have a little discussion after that.
That superficially it may appear sometimes against the social and religious rules and regulations, but if it is done for Krishna, bhakti means anukulyana Krishna anusila. Krishna should be satisfied. That is it. It doesn't matter. Krishna should be satisfied. Just like Krishna pretended that he was sick and many physicians came. He said, no physician cured me. If some devotee gives me the dust of his feet on my head, then I can be cured. So all devotees were asked, and what is it? Ganeji, may just on the head of Krishna have this possible? Nobody prepared. Then Krishna asked, go to Vrindavan. Just ask the gopis if they can give. They are my best friends. If they are prepared, I am very much suffering from headache. So nobody was prepared to go. As soon as gopis are approached, oh, Krishna is sick. They want a dust of tweezers. Please stay. Since they did not care that we are going to hell by offering our dust of feet on the head of Krishna, never mind, we shall go. Krishna will be happy, that's all. Krishna will be happy. This is all. It doesn't matter, the whole world is going to hell. But if Krishna is satisfied, the devotee is prepared to do that. That is it. That is called Uttamavam.
Was it clear? So Prabhupada is telling the story of Krishna's headache. That Krishna manifested a headache in Dwarka, and he said the only cure for the headache is dust of his devotees' feet. And of course, who is going to put the dust of their feet on Krishna? You know, it's like in Mayapur Academy, we have the Archana course where we're teaching the students how to respect the deity. So who will ever put their foot on the head of the deity or put the dust of their feet on the head of the deity? So no devotees were willing to give Krishna their foot dust. And the only devotees who were willing to do it was were the gopis of Vrindavan. Because, as Prabhupada says, they didn't mind if they had to go to hell. If Krishna was satisfied, if Krishna's headache was cured, then they're happy, even if they have to go to hell for the seeming offense of putting their foot dust on Krishna's head. So therefore, the gopis are considered the topmost devotees of the Lord. And the method of worship of the gopis, Ramya Kachit Upasana Rajabadu Vargena Ya Kalpitak, is considered the topmost worship of the Lord, is that manifested by the gopis of Vrindavan. So as the 10th canto unfolds, we'll hear more and more of these sweet pastimes of Krishna with his parents, with his gopas, with his gopis. And so we have a very sweet nectar to look forward to. But also we have also these philosophical verses that keep us on track, that we understand who is Krishna, what is his potency. And in that way we can properly understand Krishna's pastimes. One final point I wanted to address. There's also a little description when the gopis were looking for Krishna. Krishna disappeared in the rasa dance. And that's not actually mentioned in the Bhagavatam, but elsewhere, Prabhupada tells the story that they're searching for Krishna in the forest, and Krishna manifests as Narayan. So the gopis there and having darshan of Lord Narayan. So, you know, they don't offer prayers like this. They offer their respects to Lord Narayan and, you know, offer obeisances, but their focus is on Krishna. Where is Krishna? So even says, they ask Lord Narayan, can you help us find Krishna? So although they respect Lord Narayan, they understand he is the Supreme Lord, but their attraction to Krishna is overpowering everything else, even having darshan of the Lord. So like this, you know, we can simply be amazed at the deep attachment and love that the gopis have for Krishna. Many years ago, once I was listening to a class in, I think it was in Vrindavan, perhaps on Janmashtami or Radhashtami, and I was a little disturbed. The speaker, he was talking about the appearance of Lord Narayan, but he was kind of had a different angle on it, which I felt was not proper, and it's been bothering me for so many years. I just want to express it a little bit. So he said that, you know, when Lord Narayan appears, he has his four arms, and he has his club, and he's going to strike you with his club, and he's going to cut off your head with his chakra. And I was sitting there thinking, you know, this is not our mood when we see Lord Narayan. Even the gopis saw Lord Narayan. They paid their respects. They weren't horrified. They weren't disturbed. Lord Narayan wasn't committing violence with his chakra or his gada. You know, those are for the demons. So we respect Lord Narayan and we worship Lord Narayan. And even in deity worship, actually we worship the deities in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan. We don't worship them in a familiar mood, like a Vrindavan mood. So, you know, I was a little bit disturbed to hear that description, and later on that speaker actually left ISKCON, so I could understand that perhaps he was a little bit influenced by some Sahajiya tendencies, perhaps. So that's not the mood of the Vaishnavas. We worship, we respect all the incarnations of the Lord, and we can keep Krishna as our ultimate goal, you know, Vrindavan Krishna as the ultimate form of the Lord, but we worship Krishna with awe and reverence. Now, we can't artificially imitate these very high advanced feelings of the gopis or even Mother Yashoda. Now we have to worship the Lord with great respect, and, you know, gradually as we advance in Krishna consciousness, we can hope to follow in the footsteps of some of these personalities in Vrindavan. So I'd like to end here, but if you have any questions or comments. Yes, so we can pass the mic back.
Thank you, Prabhuji, for bringing in a Chaitanya Charitamrita, particularly Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya being in a getting in a blessing from Mahaprabhu. But isn't that, you know, he got blessing from Gopinath Acharya, his brother-in-law, before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave his, you know, Atmaram verse, and then he understood that, you know, this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead?
Yeah, that's also there. As I mentioned, when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya first met Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya had fallen unconscious in the Jagannath temple. That was his first darshan of Lord Jagannath when he came from Navadvip. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya actually took Lord Chaitanya, took care of him, took him back to his house. He was still unconscious. And he was manifesting different ecstatic symptoms. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was very impressed. And Gopinath Acharya was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's brother-in-law. And he was an associate of Lord Chaitanya from Navadvip. So he knew Lord Chaitanya very well. And he knew that he was the Supreme Lord also. But so he was telling this to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and his students, they couldn't appreciate that. They had some philosophical argument that in Kali Yuga there's no incarnation, and Gopinath Acharya defeated their arguments. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya didn't take it very seriously. He didn't agree that Lord Chaitanya could be the Supreme Lord. It was only after he directly had this discussion with Lord Chaitanya that he understood. So yes, Gopinath Acharya, as the brother-in-law of Sarvabhauma, he did, in one sense you could say, give his mercy, give his instructions to Sarvabhauma, and that definitely helped Sarvabhauma to accept the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And later on, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya becomes such a ardent, strong devotee of the Lord, and he was grateful actually to his brother-in-law for giving him the right understanding about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the mercy of the Vaishnava is very important to get the mercy of the Lord also. Thank you.
Can you hear me? Okay, good. I didn't quite understand the last point that you were making, that you were offended with that preacher in Vrindavan. But I've yet to see the use of gada or chakra in any other context, right? Because most of the time it's used to like punish somebody, whether in any incarnation for that matter, whether it's even even Krishna uses that, you know, to sever the head of Shishupal.
Sure.
But it's used that. So I don't know how else to
yeah, okay, I'll explain. No, the speaker was saying that for a devotee, it wasn't in the context of demons. It was like Janmashtami or Radhashtami, the appearance of the Lord. But he was saying when Lord Narayan appears, his mood was that, oh, Lord Narayan is going to cut off my head with his chakra. He's going to hit me with the gada. Because he was trying to say that Krishna is so much sweeter and Krishna is so much more attractive and my focus is on Krishna, which is okay. And the gopis also focus on Krishna. But when they met Lord Narayan, they weren't in that mood that, oh, Narayan is something to be fearful of or rejected, or he's, you know, he's like aggressive, he's going to attack us. So that was it was a subtle kind of. If you knew the speaker, maybe you would. It would be more relevant. I didn't want to mention the name, but he was speaking in the context of a devotee. That the devotee is having darshan of Lord Narayan, and he's feeling that Narayan is going to hit me and cut off my head. So that's not the mood of a Vaishnava towards Lord Narayan. Actually, we worship Krishna in the mood of Narayan. So that was. It's good that you asked, so I could clarify that. It's not in relation to the demons. Okay, thank you. Grantharashamad Bhagavatam ki, Shabhavapad ki, Paura Premanandi.